You're listening to Money Never Sleeps Radio. In your face.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
Oh, have I got your attention now?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
You know what I mean?
Money to be made in a place like this.
Money never sleeps, pal.
You're crazy. Don't run when you lose. Don't whine when it hurts.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
It takes brass.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
All right, welcome to Money Never Sleeps. This is a show where we talk about anything and everything that impacts the flow of money from around the corner to around the world. And I want to thank you for joining us today. And as you know, on this show, we speak a lot about the future of finance, blockchain, tokenization, digital assets, as well as what's happening in banking and brokerage and whatnot. Today, we're going to be talking about the news that broke. The 21 bank stablecoin consortium that was put together. Okay, it was coordinated, and it was an attempt by global TradFi banks to directly challenge Tether and Circle, USDT and USDC, and at scale. They say it's going to reshape stable competition. And I have my opinions on things, and I'm going to go through it, okay? And they're looking to pressure other institutional projects like Société Générale's stablecoin, and they're looking to create new strategic incentives for major blockchains, potentially, including Ethereum, Solana, and Pico Novus, and Avalanche, and other blockchains. But it raises deeper questions about whether bank-issued stablecoins, whether it's undermining the original purpose of tokenization in the first place, and decentralization and blockchain. You know, the 21 major banks, this is who they include: Bank of America, Citi, Goldman Sachs, Deutsche Bank, UBS, Santander, Wells Fargo, Fidelity, and others. MUFG. They're forming this company to issue a USD stablecoin in the first half of 2027, and they're looking to follow it with a euro one and other G7 currency tokens. The initiative grew from a 2025 project of 10 banks exploring and testing the waters, because it takes time for them to get comfortable with it, but exploring a reserve-backed digital payment asset. Now, this consortium, they intend to comply with the Genius Act and MiCA and the like. Everything's going to be fully regulated, as you would imagine. Institutional-grade stablecoin framework, of course. And they're targeting use cases for wholesale settlement, institutional payments, retail cross-border transfers. You know, this is what Ripple does. So I wonder how this is going to impact them. You know, because they're not part of this equation. So how is this going to impact Ripple and what they're doing? Okay, this is not again, digital asset settlement. Okay, just to end that cycle. But this is not a crypto-native stablecoin. This is the thing. It's not crypto-native. It's a bank-native settlement instrument designed to reclaim the yield and payment flows currently being captured by Tether and Circle, USDT and USDC. They put them on notice. They said, no, we don't want the money leaving the banks. We want the money to stay with the banks. We're going to go and do something centralized, and boo-hoo-hoo, we're coming after you. That's what they're doing. All right, and the reality is they're doing this because stablecoins generate a massive, massive low-risk revenue by investing reserves in U.S. treasuries while paying zero interest to holders. So basically, the holders, me, you, and every other schmo, will buy the tokens. Our money would be there. The bank will take the money and invest in treasuries, get the interest, keep building that up, while you get nothing, zero, zip. Banks want that revenue stream. This is what Tether and Circle, this is how they're making their money. And that's a good thing for them. Okay, you're talking about decentralization. USDC, you know, they're regulated. USDT, you know, they're the biggest. They control, what, about 60, 65% of the entire global stablecoin market. Circle, well, their stock dropped 6% immediately after the announcement. Showing markets, you know, a view that this is a direct threat. And it's not just a view, it's a reality. Banks see stablecoins as a future of payments. And guess what? So do I. They are. Okay, from micropayments and X402, everything else, you know. But we'll go into that another time. But they do not want crypto native firms owning the future. And this is what we have a problem. This is where we have a problem. Blockchain, in its core, is decentralized, right? Tokenization, you know, I mean, Bitcoin decentralized. All these blockchains are public blockchains that are decentralized for a reason. So you don't have that total control, because when you have absolute power, oh, that corrupts absolutely. Now, banks looking to go and issue this token, to them is a novelty, to them is an angle. Oh, you know what? We don't want to deal with decentralization, but we're going to go centralize this. Let's go and go into the room, let's smoke some cigars, have a shot of whiskey. Let's get some Jameson or something, and basically let's make this deal for them to all try to control the stablecoin market while the banks get fat. That, to me, is going to be a potential problem. But the thing is, with stablecoins, they need the banks to function. Right, so what do? If you like Coinbase, if you like other firms like Revolut and the like, what are they doing? They're getting involved in stablecoins, or they're buying banks. You know, or they're getting licenses. You know, look at what happened with Trump's outfit. Okay, they have a bank charter now, which is fantastic. You know, let the competition begin, because competition, you know, makes things a lot better, cheaper, and you have options. All right, you want options when it comes to your money. Now, you know, Societe Generale, they launched the USDCV, and that's a regulated euro-denominated stablecoin. But after nearly a year of it being in circulation, there's only 12.6 million in circulation. That's extremely low for a major bank. So the problem is, I mean, did they not market it properly? Did they not do the things they needed to do? Did they not go and put it out there and kind of like push it on their customers? Because at the end of the day, if you're using a stable coin to draw a commerce, you can convert your system into just dealing, having stable coins, having a stable coin that's basically representing, you know, the dollar value. You can do that. But they struggled to gain traction in DeFi and exchanges due to the limited liquidity and lack of crypto native integration. That's their problem. They have limited liquidity for a stable coin. And They don't have the crypto native integration, so how are you going to use it? They trap themselves. They can untrap themselves, but that's what they did. Now, this 21 bank consortium, basically, they overshadowed what was SocGen's doing with their efforts. I mean, they made a bold effort, and it takes, you know, it takes a lot of stones to go do that. And they did it before other banks were even looking to do it. But the other banks, I think, that they were looking to, again, not take some of the pie. They wanted all of the pie. They were going to leave crumbs back on the plate for everyone else to fight over. You know, now, can SocGen get involved in this consortium? Maybe not. But I know this 21 Bank Consortium, I know what they did. They went and they offered a multi-bank liquidity pool, 21 banks globally. And then you're going to have the other G7 currencies on top of that. That's where it gets insane. And they're dealing with stronger regulatory positioning. Again, I mean, you're talking about a centralized stablecoin, right? So how much different is that from having the cash on hand? Not much different, but for them, it's the facade of crypto, but it's not, right? You know, you may have an underlying blockchain type of thing or however they're doing it. However, it's not native crypto, crypto native. That's where I think you're going to probably get pushback at some point. Okay, at least you had other banks that were trying. Okay, Soc Gen, as I said, they can join a larger consortium. They can integrate into blockchain, broader blockchain systems. They can go and work with Ethereum. They can work with Solana. They can work with Pico Novus. They can work with a number of blockchains to go and bring things out. They can go have wraps in other chains. There are things they can do. They just haven't done it yet. Okay, and they better get a move on because they're already there in the space. 12.6 million? Come on, you're a bank. You should be 12.6 billion at this point. Okay, they just need a little push to get it done. Now, the big question is, how are the Tether and Circles of the world, how are they going to respond? Okay, Tether, their issue, their mode is liquidity, not regulation. Now, banks cannot. And this is the great thing here. They cannot easily replicate USDT's dominance in trading pairs. They dominate DeFi pools, exchange integration, so on and so forth. They dominate. And what I would expect? Well, I'd expect, knowing how the powers that be at Tether are and what they're doing, going into gold and data centers and so on and so forth, I think they're going to double down on emerging market penetration. They're going to start building out more, on and off ramp partnerships, like you see right now with Ethereum, by integrating Ethereum Institutional. They're making deals left and right. That's the game. You got to move fast. They're looking. I would imagine that Tether would have faster settlement rails on the docket. And possibly more transparency, maybe, if the pressure comes in. I don't know. Maybe that'll help. I don't know. Circle, I mean, they are they're cannon fodder at this point. They're going to get directly threatened here. Their stock dropped 6% on the news. They are regulated across the board. Right? So if you have these 21 banks globally that are diving into this head first, and Circle, they rely on banks and these institutional partnerships to do stuff. What does that mean? Granted, they created a blockchain to go issue a stablecoin, but this 21 gun salute here, they jumped in and they said, hey, wait a second, we're doing this too. So what can Circle do? Well, they can respond by strengthening their institutional partnerships. That'd be a good thing. Expanding cross-chain presence, basically, stop going and preventing, other chains from integrating, your stablecoin into their system. That can be a good thing. They can accelerate USDC's role in tokenization and RWAs, maybe. I think that would be, a big jump in a direction that they're not ready for. They can lobby for regulatory frameworks that favor non-bank issuers, but then again, crypto players have been doing that all along. Now you have Stripe-led, OpenUSD. Now, they already hit circle with a 17% stock drop earlier in the quarter. This 21-bank consortium adds even more pressure to Circle, creating a three-way battle between crypto native USDT, USDC, and others. Now you're talking about fintech native, OpenUSD. Now you have bank native, the 21 bank coin. So you know, again, we're going to see where this is going to go. But what I want to do now, I want to take a quick break, and then I'm going to come back. I want to talk about whether this undermines the whole purpose of tokenization and blockchain in the first place by the banks doing this. You know, traditional finance, you know, they're in defensive mode. You know, the gate's being breached, and they're trying to hold it. They're trying to hold the line. They're trying to hold it for dear life. But will it work? Okay, I'm gonna get to that right after this. I want to share a little song with you guys. Okay, so let me introduce the song. That would be good, right? All right. Basically, this song is called "Plant My Flag." Okay, and it has to do with blockchain and digital assets and the like. So anyway, take a listen. Hope you enjoy it. We're going to be back with you in about 2.5 minutes.
I came up where the back roads meet the city lights. Learned to hustle in the daylight, dreaming sleepless nights. Folks were talking about money like it never changed its face. But I saw blockchain rising like a newborn marketplace. And I said, progress ain't a rumor, it's a fire you gotta spark. So I stepped into the future, left the old world in the dark. Now I'm running on Pico Novus highways, where the code is built to last. Infrastructure strong as steel and stone, moving faster than the past. Who next keeps the beat knocking, trains flying like a jet stream blast. Tumble like a storm across the plains. Saw folks trapped inside the systems built on yesterday's remains. But Pico Nova stood steady like a backbone made of flame. A chainless world for dreamers who refuse to play the same old game. And I said, growth ain't luck or timing, it's the courage to rebuild. So I joined the ones who rise up when the world is standing. Now I'm running on Pico Novus highways, where the future's breaking through. Infrastructure built for speed and trust, a system built brand new. And who next is running like a freight line, pushing markets with a crew? Yeah, this ain't just talk of progress, it's the world we're driving to. I got cold in my boots and a dream I'm walking through. Some folks fear the changes, but I ain't scared to climb. Innovation's just a mountain made of courage over time. So I plant my flag in open code, where every voice can rise up. A revolution in the daylight, red and clear across the skies. Now I'm running on Pico Novus highways, where tomorrow starts tonight. And who next keeps the rhythm of a world that's taking flight? Yeah, I'm standing with the builders, with the future in my sight. This ain't just finance anymore, stepping into the fight.
All right, I hope you enjoyed the song. I did. Okay, now going back to where I left off, you know, does what's happening here undermine the purpose of tokenization and blockchain? You know, that's a yes and no answer. All right, now the yes is it undermines decentralization across the board. Seven days a week, twice on Sunday is doing that. Bank-issued stablecoins are centralized, they're permissioned, and KYC, AML, the whole nine yards. you know, put on your handcuffs and let us know, you know, what you're going to name your kid in 10 years. They want everything. And they may run on public chains, but they behave like private settlement tokens. And how public is that chain? I don't know. You know, and basically this shifts stablecoins from open ecosystem to bank control rails. Period. The end. Reducing the role of decentralized liquidity. All right, this is where, you know, things come out, because as I said, I am a big advocate of decentralization, tokenization, blockchain, you know, stable coins for cross-border payments and the like. Again, this impacts Tether, USDC, Circle, and a few others. But this also impacts Ripple. People aren't talking about it. It impacts Ripple. You have the banks that are doing this. What do they need them for? Okay, and the question is, the banks that are doing this, are they going to go and start linking up with SWIFT and now, you know, not knock that out of the box? Are they going to go and get with Western Union, and they're going to get with other banks? Are they going to go and grab Revolut, bring them to the party? Are they going to go grab other banks, bring them to the party? Are they going to wind up going and basically annihilating the remittance payment sector? And I think that is a big reality of the annihilation of all these little remittance payment companies all over the world. Okay, these money exchanges and so on and so forth. This whole thing is going to get blown out of the water. And when it gets blown out of the water, you're going to have companies that are in that space that are going to wind up getting blown out of the water. So the investors that are in that space, investing in those companies, watch out, you know, you may have a bad day, okay? And don't take my word for it. Just look into it yourself. 21 major banks globally getting involved in a stable coin that can run on all these rails, okay? And this changes the game. It changes the game in a big way. Now here, let me play devil's advocate and say it doesn't undermine, right? Let's say it doesn't, okay? And you can say that, you know, it accelerates tokenization, and institutional stable coins, they legitimize blockchain settlement, right? You can say that. They create regulatory clarity and institutional comfort. You can say that too, right? They push banks, asset managers, and fintechs to tokenize bonds, money markets, FX, commodities, private credit. You can say that, okay? And that happens, tokenization grows, but decentralization shrinks. See the problem? That is the problem. Okay, you can't go, that's like taking a leash and throwing it on a tiger. All right, you can't do that. You can't go domesticate a wild tiger. Blockchain is that wild tiger. Roar, it's out there. You can't throw a leash on it and expect it to go and bow down to you because you're the big bad bank. Ooh. Okay, that's, you know, this is where you're going to have the problem. You're going to have pushback because Ethereum, Solana, you know, Avalanche, XRP, Ripple, there's going to be things going on. Not just with the stable coins, but with the overall blockchain environment. The only way that, you know, the other, you know, you have, you know, an Ethereum, let's say, doesn't get all up in arms if they're involved in the conversation, right? So at the end of the day, does this help Ethereum, Solana, and Pico Novus? Well, let's go through it, right? Ethereum, likely yes. Because banks, they prefer Ethereum's regulatory maturity and tooling. They've been around for a bit. MiCA-aligned stablecoins already gravitate towards Ethereum. Tokenization, you know, real-world assets, bonds, funds, is overwhelmingly Ethereum-based. If the consortium issues ERC-20 versions, Ethereum benefits from higher settlement volume, more institutional nodes, more liquidity. Right? That's where that happens. Now, Solana, do they benefit? Possibly. So a lot of speed, low fees make it attractive for retail payments. But banks may hesitate due to centralization concerns and outages history. Let me just correct myself. If banks target, you know, retail cross-border payments, Solana could be a secondary chain. Now let's talk about Pico Novus. Do they benefit? Strategically, yes. If integrated properly, I'm going to go over this. Pico Novus, they already support ERC-20 and EVM compatibility at a protocol level. It's compliant. And that means that bank-issued tokens could actually run natively without bridges. Their distributed RPC endpoints strengthen institutional reliability. That means that everything's transparent. You can't lie about stuff. Everything's there for the public to see. All right? And USXM's issuer-specific architecture aligns with bank-specific stablecoin issuance models. So basically, they can take that model and gear it towards one of their stablecoins or their stablecoin. Very possible. Very possible. Pico Novus could position itself as a high-speed settlement layer, a tokenization-friendly chain, and a compliance-aligned alternative to Ethereum. But Pico Novus itself is not in competition with Ethereum. It actually utilizes Ethereum, you know, the ERC-20 EVM, you know, compliance to be a part of a greater ecosystem. Because blockchain is about, it's about inclusion, right? You know, it's about coming together. So it was never a matter of Pico Novus battling with Ethereum. That would be ridiculous. There's no need for it. There's enough things going on for innovation. So if Pico Novus markets itself as an institutional grade chain, as it is with customizable stablecoin issuance like USXM, which they have, it can benefit significantly. You know, and this is why, you know, the community needs to get involved with this because it could be beneficial to the community and the overall blockchain space. You know, and look, at the end of the day, you know, the 21 Banks Consortium tokenizing, is it a 911? Well, potentially. I think there should be 411. You should get as much information as possible, get transparency. But is it going to be detrimental to blockchain? That's the question. In my opinion, I think it has its good points and its bad points. And I think the bad points are going to undermine decentralization. The good points, it brings it into the new age of things. And I always said this, the future of finance is not DeFi or TradFi, it's a convergence of both. And we're going to see that convergence. I think this is part of the beginning. Okay, banks, you know, they don't want to bend as much, but they will bend. And they will help to mold what the future is going to be. It's just the DeFi players, you know, will probably, you know, jump on their soapbox and scream all day. But at the end of the day, this is about innovation and the future of finance. This is not about, you know, ideology where you're sticking to a certain thing because that's what you should stick to and die on the vine because of what you believe in. I think, you know, mindsets should be adjusted as things evolve, and we're going to see that. Anyway, I wanted to go over this with you guys because I thought it was that important to go over. And that's it for the show. Hope you enjoyed the song. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope it gave you some insight. And anyway, I want to hope that all you guys have a fantastic, you know, trading day, rest of the trading week. And we're going to be back with you with another episode of Money Never Sleeps Radio. And I'm going to touch on some of the topics that I believe will be interesting to our listeners. All right, anyway, thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back with you with another episode of Money Never Sleeps Radio. Take care.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
You're listening to UCW Radio, in your face.
What is your major malfunction?
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on Money Never Sleeps Radio are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. The host Louis Belafkef and guests of Money Never Sleeps Radio are not licensed financial advisors, and any investment decisions made based on information presented in this podcast are at the listener's own risk. Listeners are encouraged to consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. The podcast hosts and guests do not endorse or recommend any specific investment strategies or products. All investments involve risk, and past performance is not indicative of future results.